Starting in verse 6, the psalmist writes, "Come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker, for He is our God, and we are the people of His pasture and the sheep of His hand. Today, if you would hear His voice, do not harden your hearts as at Meribah, as in the day of Massa in the wilderness, when your fathers tested me. They tried me, though they had seen my work. For 40 years I loathed that generation and said, they are a people who err in their heart, and they do not know my ways. Therefore I swore in my anger, truly they shall not enter into my rest." The psalmist here is doing something that we all do from time to time, and he's reflecting back on a time in Israelite history. It's a time that's rich in so many lessons for each and every one of us, and the psalmist is thinking about these things. And he's writing about specifically the period that we refer to as the wandering in the wilderness. And so this is going to be the theme for our lesson this morning, is we're going to look back on the days shortly after the children of Israel had left Egypt. They had left slavery and captivity, and God was leading them towards the promised land. Now, why are we looking at this? Why is this important? It's important for us to think about this because you may have heard this before, but the story of the Exodus is the story of us. There's so much symbolism in what happened when Moses was leading the children of Israel to the promised land. So much that can directly apply to us. And so that's what we're going to do this morning for our first lesson, as we're going to look back. So if you'd like to go with me to the book of Numbers, we're going to start there in the book of Numbers. And I'm actually going to go to Numbers chapter 1. And as we get started this morning, the first thing I want to do is kind of set the stage and remind us of where we are as the book of Numbers opens. So I'm going to start there at Numbers 1 and verse 1. It says, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tent of meeting, on the first of the second month, in the second year after they had come out of the land of Egypt, saying," and that's where we'll pause that reading, just to help set the stage. You'll remember how Moses, God chose Moses to go into Egypt to free his people from bondage, and Moses led the people out with God's help, and they came to the wilderness of Sinai. You remember all the events that happened in Egypt, the 10 plagues, the crossing of the Red Sea, and so many miracles. Well, they get to Mount Sinai, and you remember what happens there. That's when God gives Moses the 10 commandments. Moses delivers those to the people. You'll remember that's also where Aaron constructed the golden calf and caused the people of Israel to sin. There's a lot that happens there. And as the book of Numbers opens, they've been there for roughly 2 years. And there's a lot of them. Go down with me to verse 45 in the same chapter. Verses 45 and 46 read, "So all the numbered men of the sons of Israel by their father's household from 20 years old and upward, whoever was able to go out to war in Israel, even all the numbered men were 603,550. Now, 600,000, that's the fighting men, ages 20 and older. That does not count the women and children, the very young and the very old, and the people who could not fight. So it's easy to estimate that there were at least 1 million, and I've heard some people estimate 2 to 3 million. I'm not ready to do that, but the point is, they've been at Sinai, camped around the mountain, they've been there for a couple of years, and there's a lot of them that are there. And finally, it's time to move on. They've been there for a while, and God has been giving them the law. They've built the tabernacle and laws for the priesthood. Aaron is established as the first high priest. There's a lot that happens, but God doesn't intend for them to stay there. They're ready to move on. So we go over to Numbers chapter 10, starting in verse 11. And it reads, "Now in the second year, in the second month, on the 20th of the month, the cloud was lifted from over the tabernacle of the testimony. The sons of Israel set out on their journeys from the wilderness of Sinai. Then the cloud settled down in the wilderness of Paran. So they moved out for the first time according to the commandment of the Lord through Moses. Now, here we go. They've left Egypt, they've came to Sinai, they've been given the law, they've been given commandments, and now it's time. God has told them they're going towards the promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey. And now it's time to get moving again. And so that's where our lessons are going to pick up for today. And we're going to start in Numbers chapter 11 with our lessons. Because in Numbers chapter 11, no sooner had they started out their journey than the people begin to complain. Look at Numbers chapter 11, starting in verse 4. The rabble who were among them had greedy desires. And also the sons of Israel wept again and said, "Who will give us meat to eat? We remember the fish which we used to eat free in Egypt, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna." Looking back, do you remember how God fed those million plus people while they were in the wilderness of Sinai? He fed them daily with manna from heaven, this free food that they didn't have to do anything to earn. God gave it to them freely so that they would have food. He supplied everything that they needed. And now they've started moving again, and they wish they had some meat. Well, we drop down and we see the Lord's response to this complaint. Go down to verse 18 with me. This is the Lord speaking. He says, "Say to the people, consecrate yourselves for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat. For you have wept in the ears of the Lord, saying, 'Oh, that someone would give us meat to eat, for we were well off in Egypt.' Therefore the Lord will give you meat, and you shall eat. You shall eat not one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, but a whole month, until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes loathsome to you, because you have rejected the Lord who is among you and have wept before him, saying, 'Why did we ever leave Egypt?'" Initially, they reflect back and they're thinking about those good old days. Remember when we had everything we wanted? Our minds do a very strange thing when we encounter troubles, when we encounter stressful situations. And somehow we sugarcoat the past in our minds and we are able to look at it through rose-colored lenses and we remember the good things. But what they're forgetting is the slavery, the bondage, the torture, the beatings, the death, and the cruelty that their Egyptian masters had. They're thinking about food because that's their immediate need is, "Oh, remember all the good food we had." And so God says, "Okay, you want food? I'm going to give you food. And I'm going to give you so much of it that you are going to be sick of it, literally sick of it." And that's exactly what happens. Go down with me to verse 31. "Now there went forth a wind from the Lord, and it brought quail from the sea, and let them fall beside the camp about a day's journey on this side and a day's journey on the other side, all around the camp, and about 2 cubits deep on the surface of the ground. The people spent all day and all night and all the next day and gathered the quail. He who gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they spread them out for themselves all around the camp." Now let's pause there and just understand how much food that is. Remember, there's at least 1 million people here, and God says a day's journey on this side, a day's journey on that side, and it says 2 cubits deep on the surface of the ground. A cubit is about 18 inches. 2 cubits is 36 inches. That's 3 feet deep of quail piled all around the camp of Israel, and everybody scatters, and they're gathering. It takes them a day and a half to gather all the quail. That's a lot of meat. God provided for them, but look what happens. Verse 33, "While the meat was still between their teeth, before it was chewed, the anger of the Lord was kindled against the people, and the Lord struck the people with a very severe plague, so that the name of the place was called Kibroth Hattava, if I'm saying that right, because they were there they buried the people who had been greedy. And from Kibroth Hattava, the people set out for Hazeroth, and they remained at Hazeroth." Do you see what happened there? God provided. They complained, and so God provided. But God also punished. He gave them so much that they became greedy, and that while they were still eating, many of them died. It says while they were there, they had to bury the ones who had been greedy. And after that, it was time to move on again. God was punishing them and teaching them a lesson. Their greed, their selfishness, it had a toll on their journey. So there's some lessons that we need to take away from this chapter and this example, this particular example. On the journey towards the promised land, did the children of Israel lack anything that they needed? And the answer is no. They lacked nothing. In fact, God gave them more than they needed, but still they complained. The same thing is true for you and me. I'm going to show you a few Bible verses that you are very, very familiar with. If you want to leave your marker there in the book of Numbers, you can. We're going to jump back and forth. I'm going to go over to 2 Peter. I'm going to read a verse that you're probably familiar with. 2 Peter chapter 1, starting in verse 2. Peter writes, "Grace and peace be multiplied to you in the knowledge of God and of our and of Jesus our Lord, seeing that his divine power has granted to us everything pertaining to life and godliness through the true knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and excellence. For by these he has granted to us his precious and magnificent promises, so that by them you may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped the corruption that is in the world by lust." We too, just like the children of Israel, are on a journey towards our promised land. It's not a physical land like theirs was, it's a spiritual land. But we're on the same journey, and along that journey, God has given to us everything that we need, just like he gave to them. I'm going to go back to 2 Timothy chapter 3, some other verses that you're probably familiar with. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 16 and 17 read, "All scripture is inspired by God and is profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, for training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be adequate or complete, equipped for every good work." God has provided for us everything that we need. And he's given us his word. He's given us these scriptures. And through these scriptures, we can be complete. That means we're lacking in nothing. We are fully prepared for our journey towards the promised land. And in Romans chapter 1 and verse 16 says that I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek." God has given us everything. He's giving us everything that we need to know on our journey. And we need to recognize that we are fully equipped for our journey. So as we reflect back on this, let's ask ourselves a few questions rhetorically. Do we realize that? Do we realize, as we look at our journey towards our own promised land, do we realize that God has provided everything that we need? Do we know that this journey only exists because God allows it to exist? Think about the children of Israel. 1 million+ people in a wilderness, in a desert. There's no cities, there's no anything there, and yet somehow they're able to survive and traverse that desert and make it to where they're supposed to go. This is not something that otherwise would have been naturally possible, but because God was there and because he blessed them, it became possible. Our journey towards our own promised land is the same way. It's only possible because God allows it to be possible. Or do we sit back and do we think about our own needs and our own wants and our own desires, and we push back and we think, if only God would do this for me, then my journey would be so much easier. That's what they did, and they learned their lesson, and there's lessons that we can learn from that as well. Let's keep moving forward into chapter 12. I'm going to go back to Numbers now. Shortly after this, the children of Israel are on the move again. And another complaint arises, but this time it's not from the people, it's from Moses' own brother and sister. There in verses 1 through 3, "Then Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, 'Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us as well?' And the Lord heard it." Now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. Do you see what happened here? I don't know what event particularly this is referring to, but Moses had married someone. Maybe this is Zipporah from previously, or maybe this is someone else. But whatever it is enough to make Aaron and Miriam mad. And so Miriam speaks up and says, "Hasn't God also spoken through us and not just Moses?" Well, she's not wrong. Other places in the Old Testament will refer to Miriam as a prophetess, which by definition means that God indeed spoke through her. And that in other places also, she's listed as one of the leaders of Israel, that the children of Israel were led by Moses and Aaron and Miriam. She indeed is a leader. God indeed spoke to her. But in this instance, something different is going on here. And that she's mad at whatever Moses has done here. And the Lord hears it, and the Lord responds. Go over to verse 6 with me. He said, "Hear now my words. Is there a prophet among you? If there is a prophet among you, I, the Lord, shall make myself known to him in a vision. I shall speak with him in a dream. Not so with my servant Moses. He is faithful in all my household. With him I speak mouth to mouth, even openly and not in dark sayings. And he beholds the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses?" God hears exactly what they say, and he notices the disrespect and the arrogance that's coming out of that attitude. And he says, "Why are you not afraid? Do you not realize the relationship that I have with Moses? Do you not realize the position that I have put my servant Moses in?" And they're punished for this attitude. Verse 9 reads, "So the anger of the Lord burned against them, and he departed. But when the cloud had withdrawn from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous, as white as snow. As Aaron turned toward Miriam, behold, she was leprous." Now, by the law that God had given them, she has to leave the camp. She cannot be in the camp with this disease, and so that's exactly what happens. She's put outside the camp for 7 days until she heals, and then she's allowed to come back in. Go down to verse 15. "So Miriam was shut up outside the camp for 7 days, and the people did not move on again until Miriam was received again." And once she's brought back, they move on again. Now, just like before, there's a few lessons that we need to learn from this. Number one, we need to be humble, and that God exalts the humble. James chapter 4, in verse 10 reads, "Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord, and he will exalt you." That's what exactly happened with Moses. You remember what Numbers said. It said that Moses was more humble than anyone on the face of the earth. And because of that, God exalted him. In Matthew chapter 23, when Jesus is talking about the Pharisees, he has a lot of things to say about the Pharisees and their attitudes, their hypocrisy, and their lack of humility. He condemns them for this, and he talks about how they love to stand in the prominent places. They love to wear the nicest clothes. They love to be seen by people, even though they're the ones who were sitting in Moses' seat in those days. They're the ones who were the teachers of the law, but they lacked that humility that Moses had. And so Jesus warns them in Matthew 23, you need to listen to what those Pharisees are saying, but you don't need to do what they are doing. You see, Moses was a humble man, but Miriam was humbled. Do you see the difference there? She learned a lesson. And one way or another, we are going to fit into one of those two categories as well. Either we can choose to be humble now, or before the end, God will humble us as well. This is something that we need to be careful of. We also need to be aware that we are following the right leader. In Matthew 17, at the Mount of Transfiguration, God looks at Jesus and says, "This is my son, hear him." In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, when Paul is writing to the church at Corinth, he's encouraging them that Christ is not divided. Because the church at Corinth had a problem where some were following Paul, some were following Apollos, some were following Cephas, but Paul encourages them, Jesus is not divided. We follow him and only him. We have to follow the right leader. In Moses' day, God had appointed Moses as the leader. Now, Miriam and Aaron were also leaders after their own fashion, but what happened then was not according to God's plan. We need to make sure that we are following the right leader. Philippians chapter 2, I'm going to turn and read this one. Philippians chapter 2, the Apostle Paul here is writing to the church at Philippi. And in verse 3, it says, "Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves." This is something that we need to keep in mind, and something that I think at the moment Miriam lost sight of. So let's reflect for just a moment and ask ourselves some questions. Do I know where I stand? Do I know who I'm supposed to be following? Do I know what my place is? Do I know who I'm supposed to be regarding as leader? Do I remember that it's Jesus that's in charge and not me myself? And if I'm somebody who wants to help lead God's people, do I ever stop and ask myself, why do I want to do that? Why is it that I want to help? Is it because I love the prominent places and I love the greetings in the marketplace like the Pharisees, or is it because I love God's people and I want to help? We have to be careful about that. Now, we'll do this next chapter a little bit more quickly, but I'm going to go back to Numbers chapter 13, because this is a story you're probably very familiar with. That in Numbers chapter 13, they had actually traversed the wilderness and they had reached the promised land. It didn't take them very long. With God's help, they made it exactly where they needed to go. And when they got there, God gave them instructions and they picked 12 spies. One man, each man a leader from his own tribe, and they were to go into Canaan, spy out the land, and bring back a report. Well, you know the story. That's exactly what they did. But when they came back from Canaan, they came back carrying big bundles of fruit, so much fruit that they had to put it on a pole and carry it between two of them. In fact, I'm going to go to Numbers 13 and verse 23. "Then they came to the valley of Eshcol, and from there cut down a branch with a single cluster of grapes, and they carried it on a pole between two men with some of the pomegranates and the figs." Now, imagine that. Visualize that. You're in the camp of Israel, and you have sent 12 spies into the land of Canaan, and then 40 days later, you see them coming back. Those spies didn't just magically appear back in the midst of the camp. You see them coming. And you can see that there's a couple of them that have a pole in between them, and they're carrying big bundles of fruit. What's your first impression? This land is exactly what we were told it was going to be. Look what they're bringing back, the fruits of the land. Indeed, it's going to be a land flowing with milk and honey, exactly as God promised. But the message they brought did not match the fruits that they brought back. Do we see that? Do we know that? They came back bearing good things, but that's not the message that they sent. You'll know that 10 out of the 12 spies recommended that we turn around, pick a new leader, and let's go back to Egypt. But Joshua and Caleb stood up and said, "No, we can do this. If God is with us, we can take the promised land." But the people didn't listen, and God became angry, and God decided to punish them. There are several lessons that we need to learn here as well. Back to that example of the Pharisees, we need to make sure that our message is matching our actions. You see how theirs were different? They came back sending one signal but saying something else. We need to make sure that what we're doing is not hypocritical. The other thing we need to make sure of is that we are lighting the way. Jesus called us the light of the world. Peter would echo that same sentiment when he would tell us that we need to be going out and encouraging and bringing people in, not bearing bad news that doesn't match up with our actions. We could do it the other way around too. We could have good news with bad actions. And so these are things that we need to keep in mind as we move on. Several times in the New Testament, the writers will encourage people, "You need to be building each other up." That is the opposite of what those 10 spies were doing. Instead of building people up and encouraging them that, hey, God has brought us thus far, think about all the things that God has done for us, instead they say, never mind, let's go back. We need to think about some things here. On our own journey to the promised land, am I helping people along the way? Am I encouraging people and building people up? Because we're all on the same journey. We're all headed towards the promised land. Am I helping along the way? Or am I sending mixed signals? Am I sending mixed messages where I say one thing, but when I leave the church building and I go back to work, I act totally different to the point where nobody would know what I actually stand for. Nobody would know that I was sitting on a pew on Sunday morning because my actions and my words don't match. The last part, this, and I promise I'll make this quick. The last part is the part that I almost always forget about when I'm studying this. But did you remember that after the 10 spies came back and God decided to issue a punishment against them? When they said, never mind, let's pick a new leader and let's go back to Egypt, God punished them and decided that they were going to spend 1 year for every day the spies spent in Canaan. 1 year, you're going to go back to the wilderness. So a total of 40 years. During those 40 years, every one of that generation, with exception of Joshua and Caleb, were going to die in the wilderness. And it was going to be their children, the next generation, that God would actually bring into the land of Canaan. God issued a punishment on them, and they didn't like that either. So what they decided to do is they said, whoa, we don't want to die in the wilderness, never mind, we'll go into Canaan. Well, that wasn't what God had planned, and so Moses warns them, you don't need to do that. And so one of the things that we need to see here is that God brought them to the promised land and said, okay, here's the promised land, let's go in. And they said, no, we don't want to go to the promised land. We want to go back to the wilderness. So God said, okay, you're going back to the wilderness. And they said, no, we don't want to go to the wilderness. We want to go to the promised land. And each time they made a decision for themselves, it was the wrong decision because it contrasted with what God was telling them to do. If they had just listened the first time, they would have gone on in. But instead, they were punished and they were sent back into the wilderness. God was not with them. And so they decide to go up. They decide to try to invade on their own, but the Lord was not with them and they were defeated. This whole episode, all of this, Paul, when writing to the church at Corinth, would use these times as an example and say, these things happened as an example for us. You need to think about the things that they did and the things that they said. And you need to realize that we are also on our own journey to the promised land, and there's only one way to get there. And that's through Jesus. There is only one way. I can't decide how to get there on my own. I have to listen to the leader. I have to follow the right leader. I have to be humble and recognize that this is God's plan for me. And I don't have the authority to change God's plan. So we'll reflect on one last question. Am I following God's path? This is our journey to the promised land, and it's one that we're supposed to be trying to make together. Am I following the guidelines, the path that God has laid out for me, or am I trying to do this on my own? Am I trying to decide for myself how and when and why and where I'm going to get into that promised land? Because I think if we look back at these examples, I think we'll realize very quickly that that's not the way that works. And that there's only one way. Jesus himself said that I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no man comes to the Father except through me. That's what Jesus said. He is the way. So, we'll look at these examples from Numbers 10 through 14. In our second lesson here in a little while, we're going to pick back up where this leaves off. And we're going to talk about the entry into the promised land. We'll jump forward to the book of Joshua. But for now, we'll end our lesson. And I'll end it with this invitation. Where are you on your journey? Where are you on your journey to the promised land? Have you been trying to forge your own path, or are you trying to follow the path that God has set for you? Because there's only one way. And we see time and time again throughout the scriptures, when people try to follow their own path, it just doesn't work. The only way to heaven, the only way to our promised land is through Jesus, through the path that God has provided for us. Are you following that path? Have you been baptized? Have you accepted Jesus as our Lord and Savior and been baptized into Him? If not, this is a great opportunity to do that. If we can help you in any way at all, I would please invite you to come forward while we stand and while we sing.